Jeff.
Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. You can find his books over at Next Chapter Books as well as TotallyIowa.com. The Iowa Politics Report and the Iowa Business Report come to us from KXEL Cedar Falls, Waterloo Cedar Falls. Jeff, how are you today, my friend?
Tremendous, but you're fired up about hospital mergers from what I can tell in the last segment.
I'm
just saying you're fired up.
It's interesting when you discover, it's like, I mean, you know, obviously you hear about a merger and it's like, well, they have this amount of hospitals. Will the union contracts be carried over? But then it's a very different thing when all of a sudden people are bringing up the point of will you continue to offer abortion services or transgender gender affirmation care? And they say, currently at right now, we have no plan to change those things. And that's a very big difference. You and I know words. And that's a very big difference between, no, we're not going to change those things. So, you know, well, the fact that
you need to do nothing more than look at their other facilities and see what the policies are. Obviously, there's going to be, in any business situation, one business takes over another business. Hospitals are businesses, much as we'd like. I mean, the individuals, as you mentioned in the last segment, are absolute angels. That's not the issue. But from the balance sheet standpoint, these are businesses. You look to see how the other branches of the business are operating, and you can presume that at some point, that's how the new, that'll be the new boss that comes into town.
I have yet to run into anyone who has worked for Sanford who has talked about a better quality of health care with them than with other outlets. That's my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. I have yet to talk to anyone who has worked for Sanford, who said it was better under Sanford than before. And that's my biggest concern when I hear that.
Well, standard of care, options, cost, accessibility, all of these things. And this is the problem that we have with a lot of the for-profit entities. I mean, this is the problem with any form of for-profit business. When the idea is that your number one goal is to make money, that changes the whole dynamic. Corporate media in this country was not corporate media, right? We used to have individuals who owned companies, and they did it, yes, to make money, but they could keep their own profit level low and keep the quality of staffing and what came out over the air, they could keep that high. But once it became a publicly traded stock company, a mega company, hey, the shareholders want one thing: maximum return on investment. And so if you don't squeeze every penny, then you're breaching the fiduciary duty to the shareholders. And that's the delicate balance.
And you have some of those corporations, not necessarily in the medical or in the media industry, but like banking, where it's even gotten to an point where you have banks who are consistently caught violating their own customers to basically make their stock margins look better. And, you know, that's the eventual evolution of all this, is that eventually you get to the point where you're actually abusing your own customers for the sake of the profit margins. And if you don't have checks and balances in place, that things can go horribly wrong. And I think this is the problem. And by the way, I think the whole idea of not for profit, the medical industry is for freaking profit. I don't care. I mean, it's not like it's run by nuns in 1770. Okay. There clearly is a very profit driven motivation on the medical industry. I don't care if you say you're nonprofit. It's clear that they're there to make money.
The Sisters of Mercy used to run the hospital, but that's been a while. Is that your point?
Well, yeah, and they had a heck of a baseball team too. But that aside, you know, it's interesting going back. Do you know the great movie, The Verdict, with Paul Newman? You know that one?
Was Sally Field in that?
No, she wasn't. Just a fantastic film. Fantastic film. Go watch that. Seriously, go watch it. And the hospital at point there is the Catholic hospital in Boston. And the argument of the case is you're taking on the Catholic hospital. You're taking on the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Well, it was kind of interesting because it was, you know, it was talking about this kind of overreaching, you know, entity that was there above the hospital. And it seems like what we've done is from that time, and I think that was 1980 or so, from that time, it's moved from this to these companies disguised as nonprofits, where there's a lot of money there. There's a lot of named sports arenas. There's a lot of executive bonuses. It's a corporation. And it really has, you know, one way or the other, there's just so much money involved in medicine. It was kind of destined to go this way, I think.
Well, any field where you have the potential to make money, that's going to draw investors. Investors are necessary to keep a thing afloat, but the downside is investors then want to maximize return on investment or they'll go elsewhere. And unless you are an investor who has a broader motivation, that it's not all about the money, that it's also about doing good, there is a balance that can be struck, but nobody's striking it.
Yeah. It is interesting. One of the callers brought up the fact, and I don't know the details on this, and if he's right, I'm just going to go off what he said, is that there's a 30-year agreement between Fairview and the University of Minnesota Hospital, and that comes up again in 2027. And I'm wondering, is the urgency about this merger to basically try to get this done in place so they can maximize the value of the University of Minnesota Hospital, either spinning that off and selling it back to the university, or basically, you know, keeping it in the fold. Interesting. Anyway, we could talk about stuff like this because the reality is that stuff actually has, there's a lot of day-to-day impact to that. It's not so much when we get into politics at point, although, as you say, all politics is local. And I was very interested to see the Republican officials on Long Island now officially calling for George Santos to resign, not apologize, resign. He needs to leave, including the other representative on the other side of that district, Anthony D'Esposito, who is now the Republican, who's called for for him to resign. So it's, this is, let's face it, George Santos is a unique individual in the sense is, sure, politicians lie, not to the extent here, but it's more and more as we find out more about his finances of his campaign, that's where things start to come and really get ugly.
To be very clear, in case the audience is wondering, I never claimed to come up with the phrase all politics is local.
It was all Jeff Stein, a genius in our days.
Yeah, Tip O'Neill will raise his hand and a glass and say, not so
well, the glass in the hand, and the other one in the other hand,
Yes. All right, so here's the thing with Santos. As we've discussed, they couldn't not seat him, right? The election's over. He's been declared. They had to seat him. When you lose the support at home, it's one thing for people on the outside to say, well, that's up to the citizens of the district. And that's a fair answer. What should happen to him? It's up to the voters. Well, I don't know of a provision for a recall election. Obviously, his party is backing away from him, as you note, in the state as if he's on fire. He says he's not going to resign. Now, obviously, the still new speaker, Kevin McCarthy, can make sure he's not on any committees like he's going to make sure of with Swalwell, Omar, and Schiff. Could put him in that bin and say, I'm sorry, you don't deserve to be on any committees. While all of this investigation continues about finances, that's the part where there's the potential. Because let's put it this way. He can't vote from the floor of the House if he's in prison, can he?
No. McCarthy, though, is very much still, I don't agree with it, but I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to stop it. I'm not going to be, I'm not going to tell him to resign. And they do this. It kind of brings up an interesting point, is that as we did not talk that much in regards to the, because it just happened on Friday, the 15th vote, he finally wins the speakership. The promises that he's made, the fact that Trump clearly was an influential point here. They're in a position right now. Santos is not the make or break for his leadership. And, granted, I doubt that if you had a special election in that district, the Republican would win. I think it's going to be an easy Democratic pickup in the next election if it waits that long. That being said, it still is not the make or break. He still has control. He's gotten the rest of these guys in line with the help of other people, and he's leading the charge. The reality is it concerns me that you, for Republicans who clearly need to shake the ghost of Trump off their back, the fact that they can't do this, it just tells me that if Trump does indeed become the nominee in 2024, as much as there's some bravado right now and there are people that are talking, they're just going to put their heads down and go along with it because they just don't have the ability right now to separate them. I got to give credit to the GOP out in New York. I mean, that was a pretty brave statement to say, yeah, we'd rather lose this seat than have this guy serve on it. And and granted, they're looking at it from a local political. They get him out of the way right now, they might have a chance in 2024. But
it's brave, but it's not brave. And here's why. I mean, good for them for doing it. I have no issue with them doing it. It's an easy position to take because they can't do anything about it. You see what I mean? It's like, okay, he can't come to any of our chili suppers. Oh gosh, hurt me. You know, I mean, they've made it very clear that he is not welcome, that he should get out. Great for them, but there's nothing they can do. Someone like McCarthy, if he takes an action because he can, that's when you start paying even closer attention. He couldn't do anything. McCarthy could not do anything prior to the speaker vote because everybody was a Congress member elect. There's no mechanism. All right, now Santos is sworn in. He's a congressman. McCarthy can freeze him out. He's done it with other Republicans when they were in the minority. Now he's in the majority as the speaker. He can freeze him out. Those are actions that really can make a difference. And, you know, McCarthy wasn't about to lean on anybody like Santos until after he got the gavel because he needed that vote.
Yeah, I did.
14 times he needed that vote. But that's the thing where it's like, okay, at what point is there at what point can people who can do something about it do something about it?
Well, but the problem is, and that's the thing is, we are used to, you and I grew up in a different age where even the party would turn against someone. I mean, this is what the New York Republicans are doing, is a very old school mentality of holding your own self to a standard.
Yeah.
The fact that no one in the leadership of the House doesn't want anything to do with it and is kind of just hoping to punt, even though they know there's probably that he's already lost his reelection campaign. He's not even going to be allowed to run as the GOP candidate. I guarantee you that. But that being said, it does bring up the question here is, you know, is this a new and improved Republican Party? As they said, we have to, you know, you have a lot of voices who say you need to move beyond Trump, clearly looking at DeSantis. But the reality is that as long as Trump is there, he's probably the favorite to win this. And when it comes down to it, will these guys have the guts to go on out there and say, by God's sakes, don't vote for Trump, vote for Ron DeSantis. We want him as the candidate. We do not want Trump as the candidate. And the reality is I just don't think any of them have the ability right now, that it's such a betrothed party that they do not have the ability to go on out there and even on basic stuff like a Santos going out there and say, you know what, enough's enough.
I want to say it's a little too soon on Santos. I'm not sure I've expected action yet. Okay. McCarthy hasn't even been speaker a week. But obviously, it's going to get referred to investigatory committees, which are still being set up, ethics committee, et cetera, et cetera. But as far as the specter of Trump is concerned, McCarthy, you can't trust to do anything because all McCarthy wanted was to be speaker, period. No platform, empty suit. I want to be speaker. Single-minded goal. We'll do anything I need to do to get to be speaker. That was why this whole thing fell apart to begin with. Because there are a lot of members of that caucus that don't trust him. Even those who voted for him on all 15 ballots, they don't trust him because they don't know what he stands for other than his own power. That's a problem moving forward. But look at what happened Friday night. It was better than an old movie with popcorn on the couch. They weren't going to be able to get, it shows you how my life is.
The Texas guy having to be dragged away by another guy by the mouth. No, chef's kiss. It was beautiful.
Yeah. I haven't really looked into it, but I was afraid the guy's hairpiece was going to move he was being dragged off. Look at that video again, and you tell me, is that man, does he possess a rug? But that's not important. What's important is
there's help to pay. I'm sorry. Wow. Thank you.
Are you still on medication for your injuries?
No, I've actually cleared this. I'm back to my old idiot self.
I find that hard to believe based upon hell to pay. But in any case, so they go 0 for 14. McCarthy goes 0 for 14. And so therefore he qualifies for the number one draft pick in the NFL draft. All right. So all of a sudden then, the holdouts, the remaining holdouts who were voting for other people, agree to vote present. In other words, not support McCarthy, but not get in the way. Okay, yes. That's all fine. What was it, Matt, that put that over the top? Trump calling Marjorie Taylor Greene and her wandering around the chamber, shoving her phone in people's faces. Trump.
Hello.
Trump brought them to heel. All right. And that's what did it. Otherwise, they'd have adjourned for the weekend and here would come Monday and they would be back doing that. It's only because Trump made the phone call and, you know, one of the five, I think it was the Montana representative. That's the famous picture where she's shoving her phone at him and he's, you know, giving her the Heisman stiff arm. You know, yelling, don't put me in this position because, I mean, you know, he didn't want to oppose Trump. So once again, McCarthy owes Trump. Those who capitulated on vote number 15, ballot number 15, only did so because of Trump influence. You tell me who's got the influence over the party.
Trump. your point is incredibly valid. Let's take a break. I want to actually get over the biggest hurdle they're going to have with this agreement to get these 20 on board, because this actually could get ugly. There's not much they can do. They can pass this IRS bill. It's not going to go past the Senate. But right. There is some things in the House that are going to be done which could actually end up hurting the country. We'll talk about that when we do return. Jeff Stein on with us on a Wednesday, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. M950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us. So, Jeff, when you look at what McCarthy had to give up to get this, there is one thing, two things actually, that work in tandem that are very much a concern. And that is when it comes to making sure the government can still stay open, basically making sure we don't default on our debts, that the spending bills are passed. These 20, and I'll call them idiots. I think they all are a bunch of fools, but they're being advised by some people that are very smart, because what they think they've figured out is a way for a handful of people to control and eliminate things like the Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. Their argument is going to be, we're not going to pass any emergency spending bills. We're not going to pass a deficit, a debt raise at all. We're not going to pass that. And that's on one side. On the other side, they're getting a concession to where they can determine what bills go to the House floor for a vote. So what you're doing is setting up a situation where a handful of idiots basically can go on out there and say, well, we're going to shut the government down until you guys agree to get rid of Social Security, and basically have the ability to prevent a bill from keeping it open, even if a lot of moderates on, you know, and the committees don't want, you know, are willing to extend these things to keep things open, preventing them from being able to let that happen. I should note that in 2018, 2019, there was a 35-day government shutdown, which cost us $5 billion. My guess is I wouldn't hope for the 4th of July that the national parks are going to be open, because my guess is that once we get to third quarter of this year, that everything's going to get shut down, and it probably gets shut down for a long time.
Well, keep in mind, the government is funded through September 30th. Bills to rescind funding for things already approved, like IRS agents, are going to be full of sound and fury, but have no impact because they will go nowhere in the Senate.
Yes.
So everything's funded through September the 30th. Now, the concessions given to set up a rules package, and again, this audience knows this, but every Congress, it's a two-year session in the House, every Congress starts with a new rules package. When the Democrats have the chair, there's a new rules package. Republican, doesn't matter. The devil here was in the details. And what's to say they can't just go in and amend the rules package? at some later point if it becomes problematic. This is the thing that those on the far right are concerned about with McCarthy, because if they go too far and cause too much trouble, like what you're suggesting, he could simply work with enough Democrats to pass a different rules package, and all of their jumping up and down and waving their arms in the air will be for naught.
And
I mean, they've even said that. See, this was the thing that was the real buzz on right-wing talk radio. Well, McCarthy's putting it in writing. Yeah, well, we don't trust him. Oh, okay, there you go. So what if it's in writing? It's only as good until it's amended.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't put a lot of this stuff in writing. It's a handshake deal. And to my knowledge, that doesn't have any weight, as you just sort of said. They can change that at any point.
Well, what was his other hand doing? If he had his fingers crossed behind his back as he shook hands, and, you know, the schoolyard rules apply.
Well, and if they did
That's
put
what
that...
I want to see C-SPAN get. I want to see them with him and the fingers crossed behind the back.
Well, they almost he almost had a full fisticuffs. It would be the octagon opening up there. It will be interesting to see, especially if they did get this passed where they can remove him if they want to at will. That will be fun to watch. Books for Jeff Stein over at Next Chapter and TotallyIowa.com. We'll have this up later, as well as the Iowa Politics Report. We'll talk to you next week, Jeff. Thank you very much. Hour 2 is up next.